Let me know when you're ready.
Oh, that's not how you do it. All you do is you just say, welcome or welcome back, and we'll know that we've started.
Hey, you're too nice to us.
This is Beers with Howls. Threats, beers, and Howls over boys.
Welcome or welcome back. This is Beers with Talos. I think it is episode 136, but I only found out I was hosting 20 minutes ago, so who knows? I am Hazel Burton, and it is my honour to be your host today. I'm joined, of course, by Matt and Loreen. Today, our topic is mental health. And so May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we wanted to come together today and share some of our experiences, especially around when certain topics or scenarios or frankly the world starts to feel too much. What are the ways that we try and process that? So before we get there, let's go around the room. Matt, yeah. How are you? What's on your mind?
What's on my mind? My cis friends who are big into philosophy need to up their game, because I have kind of started to check out some really genius level YouTube channels presenting a lot of very challenging kind of topics, and just the production value and the thought process and the humor and the delicate touch that goes into it is amazing. And then I slowly came to the realization that certainly the two that I most enjoy, which are ContraPoints and PhilosophyTube, were both trans, and I had not figured it out for a few videos until I started doing some research, because I always want to know, like, well, what's the background on this person who's telling me how to think? What's their training? What's their, you know, education? Kind of how do they come to be where they were? And it's just, it's shocking that when you take a group that is relatively small, and then like they are such a huge piece of this other segment of the world that I'm looking at. It's interesting to me. So really enjoying those videos, encourage people to check them out. It's all entertaining watching. It's not all easy watching. They don't tackle easy to come by topics, and they do not half-ass them. So you need to set aside like an hour to really digest the topics and kind of think about what they're presenting, and kind of try to then filter into your worldview the kind of thought processes they're advocating for. But just for the creativity and the intelligence behind it is, I love them. I think it's a great way to spend an hour to kind of have your worldview challenged and your thought processes altered, and but also to just really enjoy the humor and kindness that's behind a lot of what they're putting forward.
That sounds awesome. What would you say is the biggest worldview that you had before that has since been challenged after watching these?
I feel like when you watch the videos, you're trying on different thought processes. If that makes sense,
yes.
Like you're trying to put yourself, if you do it correctly, like if you kind of invest into the video honestly, and you're like, I'm going to try to take what Abigail is putting forward and really try to see what message she's trying to convey, and you kind of try on that thought process. I think the one that was just really not challenging, but like informative, like the really kind of put me in the struggle that person felt, was her coming out video, because she was an amazing philosophy channel before she transitioned, and it was she was very well known in the UK and on the internet. And so to have her kind of have to go through publicly going from where she started to where she is now, and her having to walk the viewer through that, because she had almost, you know, 800,000 subscribers, I think, at that point. And so she and it wasn't, I think, kind of going back and understanding it maybe with some rearward looking vision. If you were paying attention, it shouldn't have come as a surprise, as a huge surprise. She'd always been very firm on trans rights, had always been very comfortable working in those those topics, which can be challenging if you are not someone who has had to go through that thought process. But I just think that was the one where you really kind of get a sense of, like, you get some of the people who are like, oh, it's a choice, or it's a this, or it's a that, and you kind of understand that it's deeper than that. And
right.
If it's a choice, like the penalties that she's paying in order to go through that process, particularly in the UK and the troubles they're having with handling transgender patients and their healthcare system, and that she's also covered, like, it's just, it was a lot to, it was one of those kind of videos where you're like, all right, I'm going to have to spend the next, you know, week or so kind of processing everything that she put out there, both consciously and subconsciously. And I'm at the point in my life now, where I really enjoy that kind of process where you're like, okay, there's 7 billion of us. Like, what does it mean to be like this person? Like, culturally or thought processes or challenge wise, what are you kind of, what have I missed experience wise and process wise going through life? Like I've gone through, and it has not been easy or straightforward, and it's not for any of us. But I think because we make decisions about how to perceive the world based on our experiences, if you don't go out and try to understand more experiences than those that are just yours, you're not a particularly effective person for making decisions that take care of everybody. And so, like, when I was young, I spent a lot of time reading science fiction, which explores those kind of issues by abstracting the problems that they're trying to analyze culturally and societally, by assigning them in different ways to the story. Either it's we're oppressing aliens, and so you don't have to think about it from the historic lens of oppression or something like that. I prefer nowadays to have that just stuffed in my face and be like, this is the problem, and this is what it's like. And so those both of those channels do a great job of keeping me entertained, but also forcing me to, like, look at things from different perspectives. And what, for whatever reason, right now, that's where I want to, or where I am, where that's the kind of thing I want to do on my free time.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. And as you said, like, taking the time to understand other people's perspectives is the root of giving other people grace and understanding everything. Yeah, I'm going to be checking those out, definitely. You've sent me a couple of links and resources, so I'm going to be checking those out. Laureen, how are you doing? What's on your mind?
Doing all right. I've actually watched all of those videos. I was watching both of those channels before either of them transitioned. God, I can't even remember how many years it's been now, because
it's been a couple years for Philosophy Tube. I don't know how long for
Contra. Maybe like 2 years
longer.
But I think ContraPoints removed all of her old videos, and that's, you know, her prerogative, but I thought the old ones were super good too. They're a little more humorous and forceful than the newer ones are more like articulate, I would say. But I'm a person who enjoys humor and force, so. However, I have found that lately it's actually a lot harder to watch the videos because, not because the topics are more challenging, but because I'm, like, very aware of the things that they are talking about. And I have found that for my mental health, really steeping myself in that stuff is like just punching myself in the face. So I have to, like, really be careful about when I do that, so I don't go into a negative spiral about the political outlook of the world currently. So what I've been doing is playing Zelda. To no benefit to my mental health, to be perfectly honest, because manipulating those stupid objects into doing what they want you to do with them is incredibly obnoxious. And I'm very bad at, like, spatial visualization and, like, twisting objects in 3D space, and it's just so obnoxious. So now what I do is I just cheat at everything. Like, I keep a rocket at all times, and then if I have to go somewhere, I pull out the rocket and go straight up into the air and then just fly directly into where I need to go instead of playing the game.
Yeah.
So my experience with it.
I recently got the new Jedi Survivor game, and the world building that is absolutely incredible. I can't do the puzzles, but I enjoy leaping around with a lightsaber and putting it straight into the chest of a stormtrooper.
I mean, what's not to like?
To stab a fascist.
It's something I try and practice every day. So for me, I guess what's on my mind is something that I'll be doing in just over an hour's time, which is stepping onto stage. We've got an improv show tonight, which is a new format, and it's a detective murder mystery improvised show. Nobody knows until we get there who is the victim and who is the murderer, and everyone else is a suspect. We like draw that out of a hat, only they know. And I'm going to be playing the role of detective tonight. So it's my job to try and interview all of the suspects, try and find out their motives, go to the crime scene, find out what happened, how they died, who found the body. Yeah, interview some of the witnesses and then try and pull the whole story together. whilst making it up as I go along. So,
have you spent all of your prep time learning to be a pickpocket? Because I feel that would be the most effective detective for this scenario.
That's the red teamer in you. Like, just go straight to the source, pick out that piece of paper that says the murder on it, and yeah.
That's
the easiest and quickest way to do it.
That's all of Loreen. There's no other.
Yeah, and a real smart murderer has planted their "I'm the murderer" piece of paper on somebody else already.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that and finding out how wrong it's going to go, but it'll be really fun. All right, so let's come on to our main topic today, which is looking after our mental health and talking about some of the things that we do to protect it. So, I think I want to start here. So, Matt, I was listening to the episode that you did recently about Jaguar Tooth and the network infrastructure stuff. And you said, if something's not on fire, I don't know what to do. Like, everything at the moment is like an emergency response to stuff. So I wanted to see if you could talk about what are the things you do to help yourself in that sort of always on emergency mindset.
I watch after talking about two extremely smart women on YouTube, my actual healthcare management process is just to watch the dumbest thing I can find on YouTube. definitely you have to be careful of how dumb you go, obviously. But figure out who you can listen to that doesn't cause you any sort of angst. But a lot of gamer YouTubes, I like watching people play games. I do that much more than I actually play games nowadays. But a lot of them are very personality driven, in that it's kind of more like hanging out with someone. Not to get too parasocial on it, but you start to understand and string together their life. And just anything that's not work, or anything that's not stressful, or anything, everything just is light and generally humorous. I will watch. I watch a lot of Northern Lion. Is kind of like that, where he just does a lot of the kind of Wordle and stuff, like those kind of puzzle games, but also some other PC games. But a lot of it is just his take. He's got a kind of a comedian background, and it's just a very light session of just hanging out with somebody and having it in the background. I also like stuff that I like Drawfee, which is for artists that kind of do spontaneous drawing, and also each kind of have kind of a comedic background as well. Just anything that is, I think we've probably pretty established that I'm broken in some way at this point. I can't stand right now, any plot driven anything. I can't watch normal television. I have no patience for movies or scripted anything. I just want I want some level of information and talent kind of coming at me. And if that's, if I'm in a mood where I want to like, I want to chew on that, then I'll watch something like Philosophy Tube. If I'm in the mood where I just want information to come in and I don't care to retain it, then I just want something to like occupy my brain so it doesn't come up with weird thoughts all by itself, then I'll just watch somebody play Super Auto Pets for a couple hours and then go to bed.
Are there like signs that you recognize within yourself or you've learned to recognize within yourself that you need to go and do stuff like that? Like it, everything is becoming just a bit too much and you recognize some of these signs and you need to go do something else.
Yeah, there's a couple. One, and I think this kind of goes along with some of my mental health challenges as well, is like when I start thinking that I don't belong at my job, where I'm like, and it can come in kind of two ways. Either I don't like deserve to be in the role that I'm in, or that I don't want to be in the role that I'm in. And I love the job that I have currently. I love the people I work with. I love the problems and the challenges that are brought forward, but it can be a lot. And so that's one set of kind of things that I've really gotten good at kind of tuning to that kind of thought process. Once I get into that, I'm probably at a place where I need to reach out for some help. And I'm past the point where I definitely need to start ensuring that I have separation from work, to ensure that I'm having enough off time to kind of reset before I go back in. And then the other thing is just how I treat people, like just making sure that I am not holding them to a weird standard, or that I'm not, that I'm not conveying to them intent that they haven't expressed. Like I have to be and ensure that I'm treating them fairly. Like, and so if I'm so frustrated with someone, that the script that I'm writing in my head has an edge to it that I don't like when I'm managing. Like I try to manage very consciously, and light, like I like to have a light touch and kind of a humorous approach. And like, there's no reason for me to take with any of the people that are on my team. And I have about 60 people at this point. Like there's no one on that team that deserves or needs or desires that kind of interfacing with me, and that it will never be helpful. And it's not my desire or default to act like that. But if those are the sort of words that are coming up in my head when I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to deal with something, then it's clear that I'm not operating at my 100%, and I need to be careful about what I choose to do with my work time. And I need to make sure that I make enough personal time so that I can kind of reset all that and get back to the baseline I want to be at.
I heard a couple of things there that are kind of interesting to me. So the first thing that you mentioned is that you were watching these videos to fill your brain so it doesn't come up with dumb things to tell you, right?
Yeah.
And that's like also one of my biggest techniques. And so I'm usually doing that by picking some activity that kind of like completely gives me task saturation, if people are like familiar with that term. So like surfing and flying planes were very similar in that way. It took like every bit of my consciousness to do those things. So there's no space for like negative thought patterns to occur. I find playing music, if I'm pushing myself, is also exactly like that. But as a last ditch thing, because I have some pain issues that I deal with, I've got some beads that I keep with me for mantra stuff, which is basically like a direct shot to doing that. You're just flooding your brain with a simple positive message over and over again so it can't squeak off into space. But the way that I tell if I need to do any of those things for me is all physical. I kind of figured out what happens often with like being overwhelmed with stuff is that I'll have a physical sensation that's kind of unrelated to any thought process. And then my brain will be like, oh, you feel like shit. Why do you feel like shit? I'm going to come up with a story about it, and then I'll work that story, right? And it's the physical stuff that starts first. So if I'm like very conscious of like my heart rate or like the tension in my breathing, I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm pretty close to threshold right now and I got to go.
Yeah, I think it's important to be self-aware to recognize those things before we build those worst case scenarios and feel so consumed to them by them that you feel like you can't get out or you don't have a choice. And I've been there myself. I think for me, I don't know if I have any good distraction techniques, but when I'm in a situation that I don't want to be in, or I feel overwhelmed, or I feel a strong emotional response to something, I've kind of learned to have some awareness about why I might be feeling like that, like having some curiosity as to, okay, this is interesting, I'm feeling something, let's just take a second before reacting, and then like breathing, as you mentioned before, just like giving myself just a little bit of space because I don't need to react immediately. And then realizing that I do actually have a choice. So like, for instance, on just like a couple of days ago, I was in a situation where I felt incredibly upset by something that somebody had said in a large group setting. I kind of like thought, you know what, I do still have a choice about how to react here. I can consciously continue, knowing that that is a thing that upset me, or I could leave if I wanted to, or I could compose some kind of response later on. And I think what happens in a lot of these cases is that people feel they're losing a sense of control or a sense of kind of self-awareness when everything gets too much. And I guess for me, it's just reminding myself that actually, no, I do still have the ability to stop, take note, and then respond. So, yeah, I think I just try and remind myself that it's resisting reacting and then responding in the way that I would want to.
I think another thing that helps me in scenarios like that is to kind of deconstruct the story. So I can go through like a path in my head that's like, all right, I remember I was paying attention to 10% of the facts that were going on around me at the time this memory took place, right? So let's say I have 10% of the information, and then my memory is only 50% reliable. I can actually trick myself into remembering anything I like in a negative thought space, right? Or reinterpreting everything. So you can say, all right, I have these facts and I have this outlook on it, and they're not necessarily true. And now I built a story based on those facts. And so the story connects with all those facts, but I could also tell an infinite number of other stories that are connected to those facts and make sense, right? A lot of the stuff that goes on in our stories is like assumptions about what the person meant when they said that, and how are they right. feeling, and was it directed towards me, or was it just, did I take it strangely, right? Like all that stuff you can kind of deconstruct and be like, well, you know, I actually don't exactly know how that went down, and maybe there's,
yeah,
like the game you can play is come up with five other stories that match those facts, right?
Yeah.
For yourself, and it really takes it down.
Yeah, like so often we react to either somebody else's behavior or a piece of news with judgment, and like we see it in ourselves, but you don't, so a lot of people don't take the time to be curious about what's actually driving that behavior and that reaction. So I try and be quite conscious about it, like what is driving my emotional reaction to something. As a highly sensitive person, I do this a lot because emotions are, you know, always there. So I try and like figure out, okay, what is driving that? And then seeing that as a signal. And if I see that as a signal, it's easier to suspend my judgment and then get curious about, okay, why I'm reacting to it, and then just explore what's underneath it, because it might not be what I think it is. What I also maybe wanted to talk about is how do you deal with significant change or like rug pulls? So one thing I should have mentioned at the start is that I have officially joined Talos. I've been 4 weeks into my new role. And now that I do that, I get the emails from Matt Wachinski, and kind of like the newsletters. And in the first one that I received, he was talking about change and processing change. I guess I just wanted to see what your guys' experiences are on dealing with change and dealing with the rug pulled up. Something that you thought was going to happen turned out to be like not happening at all. Like, what goes through your mind when those kind of things happen?
Well, I think it's important to note that both Laureen and I are people leaders. And so when we're talking organizational change or process change, we have to think not just about, all right, how do I process this? Because I get to be a human too, even though I'm a manager. I still get to be angry or frustrated or excited or curious. I get to do all those emotions. But I also have to help shepherd a whole bunch of other people through that same process. And hopefully, like, part of leadership is trying to guide them on a path on how to manage that change. And so I think my tactic, and this, you're not going to find this very often in like any how to be a good corporate leader, but like, is to acknowledge like the shit started change and like the fight. Like, you're like, hey, we are being asked to do this new thing, and yep, it sucks. Like, here, no, I know it's, we're going to lose this much time and this and this and that, and it's not great. And it's probably not going to achieve whatever goal that they want to go, but here, like, I've done a few parts of it, or I've kind of looked at the process. Here are a couple of things that I've actually gotten out of it, like that are actually useful to me. Here are some pitfalls that I want you to avoid, having looked at this process or this change. And so part of it is kind of being honest with your people, and helping them find both the things that will actually be better about the change or useful about the change, and also aspects of the change that you definitely want to avoid so that you have the best experience. I think that's true for, like, whether it's process change or people change, transitions in employment, like all those kind of things you kind of have to look at honestly. And not, to kind of Laureen's point that she was making before in terms of like telling yourself a story, not over inflating the change to where it consumes you, but trying to place it in an honest light of, right, this is the cost of this change, and I'm going to have to pay that cost because I'm part of this team. Here are the benefits of the change. Here are the ways the change can help me, and here's the way the change can hurt me, and here are the things I need to do to kind of safely get through that. And I have to do that again for myself and also help my team go through that same process.
Yeah, I think that really covers a lot of it. And I just kind of want to dig a little bit deeper into that first portion. Like, before we go talk to other people, the processing that happens internally, what I do there is I will have my frustration and grief response and like express it, usually to Matt, which I'm sure he finds frustrating. And then afterwards, I clear the cache. So, like, I clear my memory out and I pretend this is a new situation that I was not involved with previously. And I've come into the new situation and I am a person who has a job in this new situation. Like, I just got hired to solve this problem. And then I start from nothing from there emotionally, right? Like, what I found is if I have a problem, that's an emotional thing. But if somebody else has a problem and they ask me to help them solve it, I have a lot more emotional space to help. So I just pretend it's someone else's problem, basically. Or like, I just came into this brand new and fresh, and my goal is to see what I can manage to pick up here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The disassociation helps me when it comes to like inner critics. Like, Matt, I think I've told you that I've named my inner critic Susan.
Oh. Interesting.
For I don't know why. I don't know why I chose that name. I know one Susan and she's lovely.
It's all helpful to like call it out and label it, right?
Right. Because there was a time when I thought I'd gotten rid of Susan. Like, she hadn't been around. I hadn't heard of her because she's probably still there. And then she showed up at the worst possible time. just as I'm about to give a presentation, and she cuts, saying all these things like, you're gonna forget everything that you're about to say, you're gonna fall over, they're gonna start throwing, you know, sausages at you, all of these kind of things that I like built up in my mind. But by kind of labeling that as so, like the inner critic as someone else who's telling you lies, not necessarily the truth. Sometimes, to be fair, she is telling the truth, but sometimes she isn't. And that just kind of helps me kind of go, okay, hello, Susan. How are you? You're here. Great. Maybe like trying to understand like why you're here. Oh, it's because I'm quite nervous and I really want this to go well. That's fair. That's perfectly fine. Rather than letting the inner critic or whatever take over.
I think it's also helpful to be like, you know what is true? My thoughts are not true. That's just some stuff my brain is doing. They're not
exactly
true. And unless I am really applying myself to understanding a problem, my thoughts are generally useless. They might as well not be there unless I'm really digging in. If I'm not digging in, they're not helping me.
And I'm so distracted right now. I want to give a talk so bad that someone throws sausages at me. Like, I want to be responsible.
I don't think it's
for
possible.
The sausage throwing incident of 2024. Like, I have goals.
You're going to have to like invade Iraq and then give a speech if you want someone to throw something at you. Like, that's the threshold.
Dude had an arm. And Bush had moves. That was close.
That's not the first time someone's thrown a shoe at him, I'm sure. If justice is real.
You're going to have to come up with a new trophy, the sausage trophy.
No, we're on the right track here. Let's work on this.
Workshop it. Keep workshopping.
Oh, man. But yeah, I think, yeah, the kind of the running theme is trying to be cognizant of the things, the signals, the track that we're on to stop that overwhelming feeling. I did want to mention a podcast which I love listening to. It's called The Alarmist. Have you listened to it?
I've heard of The Alarmist. I haven't listened to it.
Okay. It is a really, really fun take on analyzing history's greatest disasters. So like the Titanic, the Hindenburg disaster, but then it's like, oh, who broke up the Beatles? You know, things like a whole range, like who is to blame? And the host opens the show in this really cool way. She like puts on a trailer voice and she says, I'm going to try and do it.
Oh, voice.
She says like, I was born with a special ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls this catastrophizing. And so what she's doing is like, she's saying that she has this gift of catastrophizing and turning everything into the worst case scenario, which I really like. Like, she's built a career out of it, though. She's built a career out professionally catastrophizing. So as long as she's, as long as she's, you know, cognizant of it and allowing her to be her, to play to her strengths, like I was saying before, like, you know, I've highly sensitive, and for most of my life I wish I wasn't, but only in the last couple of years I'm so glad that I am. It gives me the ability to fight for justice where I see it, where it gives me the feelings of empathy, like so many benefits to having it. I just need to be mindful. That's a thing. I need to be mindful that I need to control it at times when it's going to, like, you know, flare up. Sometimes I need to teach myself that my fight or flight instinct is only for, you know, life or death situations, not for responding to an email.
That is so real.
But yeah, I'm so glad that I have it, but just being cognizant of it is a step to a healthy mental state of mind.
I would caution catastrophizing lady a little bit, right? In that if you run the program over and over, that's the program that runs in your head, right? Like, whatever you think, that's what you're going to think more. So I think if that were, if I were able to control myself properly, what I would want to do is maintain like the analysis ability of catastrophizing without the emotional component of it, because it's really the emotional component of it that is damaging. It's the fearing about the uncertain future portion that is not helpful, whereas the perception of risk is helpful.
Yeah. So, the uncertain future, like, I know that we've had a hell of a couple of years. Are there any things that you are able to do and process when everything else feels so uncertain? Any practices that you do?
Oh, my latest is I have decided that I'm 49 and I now know what my worldview is. So I don't need to consume additional news to understand what my world news. I know who I dislike. I know who I support. I know with just a little bit of research up front how I'm going to vote when that comes around. I don't need to be constantly consuming the entire planet's worth of bad news every day on a immediate, like, you know.
Lorene is emphatically nodding.
So I have consciously stopped. I used to have a cycle where I'd hit like Washington Post, CNN, Twitter, Washington Post, CNN, Twitter, Washington Post, CNN, Twitter. I have set up like on Twitter, I have a list of hockey people that I follow so that I can get onto Twitter and get the latest on hockey, which I've enjoyed. But I rabidly avoid the main page and main timeline, particularly now that it's so crazy and what it's serving up. I'm very careful in YouTube. As soon as something comes up that's like a little cross with what I'm interested in looking at, I'll immediately kind of like, don't show me that channel again. Don't show me that topic again.
Yeah.
Because I know that I have to constantly be training that engine. Because it has shown me, so like I found PhilosophyTube, for example, because it like popped up one day on my recommendation feed, and so that is a useful tool that YouTube has created, but it has to be managed. And this is true. I've also been very careful about taking certain people out of my Twitter follows and stuff like that, because I just need to train these engines that. I don't want to be radicalized in any direction, even the direction that I prefer, because I just don't want to live my life that way. And so that's been like the major difference between like pre-COVID me and current COVID me is like an aversion to news. I don't need to know everything that's going on in the world. It doesn't do anything but piss me off, sadden me, anger me, make me question like the very value of people walking by me. Like, just I don't need that kind of input. And so as a kindness to myself, I have radically ratcheted down how much time I spend looking at news.
Oh, I have another kind of suggestion that goes along with that. I'm not going to tell anyone to do anything or think any way, but I would implore you that you get a little notebook, like a little Moleskine notebook and a pen. And whenever you are on social media, if it makes you feel like garbage, put a little star there with the date. And then after 3 months, look at the notebook and then come to your own conclusions about whether or not you should be doing the things you're doing on the internet. Just figure it out yourself. Do some data analysis. That's what I'll say.
The squirreliest algorithm out there is actually, and this is probably no surprise, is Reddit. Because it'll like show me I like the things that make me smile Reddit, and I also follow like the Washington Capitals Reddit and cats are assholes Reddit and animals being jerks Reddit, which are probably the two that probably cause me the most issues, because it'll be like, this Reddit is like another Reddit, and I'm looking at that Reddit and I'm like, that Reddit is not something that I want to be looking at.
Oh, I never take those suggestions. Never take an algorithm suggestion. If I'm on Reddit, I'm like, I go to this Reddit, I read this one, and then I close the site.
Reddit is really deterministic. Like, I only want to see what I want.
It's like Usenet, right? Like, you don't want a random selection of Usenet getting put in front of your face. You just want to go to the one news group that you want, right? Like, that's all it is. It's someone now owns Usenet. There's a website for it. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't go searching Usenet unless you want to see what you're going to see.
Yep. I wish I could shut that off. I wish I could shut the recommendations off on Reddit, for sure.
I just don't go to the main site. Go directly to a slash r slash and don't ever go to reddit.com.
Okay.
Loreen, you mentioned before we started recording that you wanted to bring up questionable mindfulness practices.
For me, the overarching thing is like developing introspection for yourself, which is like, oh, these are my habits. These are my thought habits. In this situation, I tend to do this. In this situation, I tend to do that. And like, so calling it out and marking it and keeping track of it means that I can watch myself move through the world and be like, you're crazy here, you're crazy here, you're crazy here. That was like the number one thing is like realizing that I myself am a crazy person and literally every other human is a crazy person too, because they believe all of the stories that they're telling themselves on 50% of 10% of the facts around them, right? And you can get extremely carried away off in a crazy direction with any of these stories. And I think the past couple years of politics have shown us that pretty conclusively, right? So once I realized I was a crazy person, I thought, oh, I need to catalog my craziness so that I can work with it, right? And like change how I interact with the world to move around it in some sane fashion. And so any activity that helps me get that introspection and then figure out strategies to work around it. Like a lot of strategies are don't be in the wrong place, don't be in the wrong situation, right? Like I know I can't handle this thing, so I need to, you know, be aware that it might happen and work around it. Cool. A lot of stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's, just to be real clear, there's a difference between being self-aware and being, I want to say self-involved, but that has like a connotation I don't like. It's not dwelling on kind of what's going on with you in the moment. It's trying to understand how you are dealing with what's happening in the moment.
Yeah, it's meta.
Right? It is very meta. It is you are abstracting a layer and trying to watch you process something and try to like intellectually be like, am I okay right now? I don't look like I'm okay right now. Maybe, why am I, how did I get here? And like, I was on the main page of Twitter again. That's a no-no.
And maybe don't make any decisions when you realize you're there, right?
Yeah, like responding to what's going on rather than reacting to it. And therefore the events are always driving you. And like you feel yourself getting smaller and smaller in the process. You're like, oh no.
Yep.
Come back up.
There's also
leave like, this place.
The very basic mindfulness practice of like, my heart's beating, I'm having a fight or flight because of an email. Okay, I'm going to go sit on the couch and I'm going to look out the window at the trees. And now I'm a normal person in a really safe house, staring out the window. My cat is sitting on my lap. That's what's happening now. The email and the information in it are not real or relevant to my physical self. So, right, just be on the couch. Just look out the window. Nothing else is real except for the couch and the window.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that has really helped me, and I'm just now kind of thinking about this, and I haven't fully thought out necessarily what it means, but like being a manager of a growing organization and having like a diverse set of people with like all their own quirks and habits and desires and weaknesses and strengths, like having to consciously be aware of each of them as individuals, so that you can like optimally interact with them and get them what they need on a one by one basis, even though there's a bunch of them, has really helped me kind of come back to myself and be like, hey, you get to be an individual too. You don't have to exist as you are defined by whatever like structure you're in. You get to be Matt, and and you should embrace that. And, you know, sometimes being Matt is, you know, a pain in the ass, like, and, you know, then that's just part of being Matt. But like, sometimes it's more fun than other times. And but in all those times, as long as you're being honest with you and who you are, and you're giving yourself the space to exist as a flawed human being, then you're going to be all right. And I've taken a lot of comfort from what the people on my team have taught me about being human over the last 5-10 years.
Yeah, I think that was kind of one of the things I was meaning before with the kind of the Alarmist podcast is, yeah, it's really okay to be who you are. There's, you know, there's no need to try and take anything away from who you are. Just be cognizant of it.
I think if you do that, you lose both a lot of yourself and a lot of respect from the people that work for you. If they don't see you being human, then they don't recognize it's actually okay to be human at work. And if they're not thinking it's okay, then they are going to have a lot of trouble, just like you will, right?
Yeah, one of my employees was in the midst of an incident response, but had a cruise coming up, and they're like, "I'm thinking about canceling the cruise," and I'm like, just out of curiosity, if one of your employees, because it was a team leader, if one of your employees came to you and said, "I'm going to cancel this cruise so I can keep working," what would you tell that person?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, it's like, once it's presented, once you present some of these things as someone else,
yeah,
as long as you're not a sociopath, you're going to find the right path for you, mm-hmm. right? And sociopaths always find the right path for them so that they'll be all right. so it's actually, it really is a useful technique to be like, well, what if this affected someone that you're in some way kind of managing or you know, taking care of? So it can be a family member. It can be a friend. It doesn't have to be like a corporate kind of structure. It can be like, you know, what if your daughter came to you and had this, or what if she was in this situation? How would you want her to react, and what would you want her to decide? And I think that it goes back to giving yourself the kindness of being a human. Like, you also get to be cared for, and you also get to be taken care of, and you also get to take a break.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Give yourself the compassion that you provide to others is like the thing my yoga teacher who's made out of flowers and good intentions from the 80s would tell you.
Yeah. And sometimes it takes someone else to, like you did, Matt, with your colleague, like spotting something, go, I need to try and help you protect yourself from yourself right now and put things in a different light.
I think that's a, you know, I mean, if you're a manager, like, and you're not an utter piece of shit, like no matter, like I worked in jobs where I had no faith in my management to in any way, not just not look out for you, but just not to care at all. And I'm privileged to work in an organization, both inside of Talos and inside of Cisco, where a lot of time is spent talking about, you know, how you treat your employees. And we work in an industry that's highly competitive from a hiring perspective. So it like makes business sense for us to take care of our customers, our employees. But like, just as a, if you're in a management position in any way, shape, or form, like, you need to help protect your employees, both from the people above you and from the structure that you're working in, and from themselves. And those are three very complicated asks. But I think as a manager in this, the world that we're in, like, you should really accept that part of your job is to take care of the people that are under you. And that doesn't necessarily line up with everything you're being asked to do, but it's up to you as a human to come up with a plan that satisfies all the competing pressures you're getting and also puts those people in the place where they're safe.
Yeah, well said.
In relation to people kind of working a little bit harder than they ought to, I would implore people to think about the fact that if what you are doing is so important that you cannot take a break, consider what happens if you break down. Then it would go from like you getting 80% of it done to you getting 0% of it done, right? So it just makes good sense to make sure that you are far enough away from your threshold that you're not in danger of breaking, right?
Yeah.
It'll only be worse if you do.
Yeah.
So give yourself the break.
Yeah. Matt Wyczynski was talking about this when I spoke to him this week. You know, he was saying the work's always going to be there. Like the threat landscape is not going to be brought down by you taking down one particular botnet.
Yeah.
Like it's always going to be there. It is not your sole responsibility to fight for yourself. We're all in this together. So give yourself the grace and the priority to take a break. All right. So before we close, maybe just once more around the room, parting shots, closing thoughts. I've probably got that the wrong way around, haven't I? Sorry, Mitch will be back next time.
Thinking parts and shooting shots.
Yeah. Closing thoughts, parting shots, parting thoughts.
Parting glass.
Matt, you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I feel like we've done a whole episode of party shots. Like normally, that's kind of where we kind of cheat and kind of try to give a little piece of homework or kind of an assignment or something. Or I don't know. I've talked about them before, but you know, in case this is you missed it, check out Daisy the Great on YouTube. They're fantastic. Female duo, kind of indie rock duo, astonishingly good catalog. They are a great thing just to listen to, no challenges, just go enjoy yourself and enjoy the music they make. And I think that would be a fine way to spend some time.
Nice. Lorene?
Fine ways to spend your time. Let's see. It was Terry Kath Day this week. It's the guitarist for Chicago. It's not an official holiday or anything. I just decided that I was going to go do a deep dive on his work.
Yeah, if you celebrate, I mean, happy Terry Kath Day.
Yeah, so if you're a musician and you're interested, you should check out some of Terry Kath's stuff and the rest of the stuff that Chicago does. There's like some really interesting jazzy stuff in there, like horn lines that start on the 9 and a lot of cool rhythm playing. So, you know, check it out.
Awesome. For me, I guess, aside from the fact that if there are any trophy makers out there who specialize in sausage trophies, we're looking. So give us a call.
We're in the market.
We're in the market.
Just email Hazel. Don't email us with your sausage trophies.
Oh, my.
Nah, I'll take a sausage trophy email. I want to see what we got. I want to know what the invisible hand of the free market is wrought in terms of sausage trophies.
Oh my God. Subject heading, Hazel, here's your sausage.
For your invisible free hand.
All right. I watched an incredible documentary a few days ago, Michael J. Fox story. And still kind of thinking, still, no pun intended, still thinking about it. So he talks about his early life, his childhood, getting his roles in Family Ties and Back to the Future, and being diagnosed in his early, like late 20s, just as he was starting a family, with Parkinson's, and trying to hide it from his colleagues for a long, long time, even though, you know, he was in a lot of pain trying to hide his tremors. He's such a likable person and really, really, really funny guy. He spoke in front of Congress about there needs to be more research dedicated to Parkinson's. And the first thing he said when he got up to the podium is said, "I'm extremely moved to be here." It's like, no pun intended. just a wonderful documentary that they make such good choices on selecting footage from Back to the Future and Teen Wolf and stuff like that that aligns to how what was going on in his personal life. And so you see like Marty McFly's reaction to stuff that he's Michael J. Fox is saying as someone in his 50s talking about his life. So incredible documentary. I encourage people to check that out. And with that, I don't know how Mitch closes. I'll have to improvise this bit. I've switched off by then.
Love it.
Just kidding. Thank you so much for listening. This is mental health is a topic that we are all really passionate about. And thank you to you both for sharing your experiences. Incredibly valuable. And to our listeners, give yourself some grace, give yourself a break. And we will see you next time for the next Beers with Talos podcast, which might be 137. Who knows? We'll see you then.